government for the media. It is 8.5 minutes past nine. Well, first, the nationwide housing shortage and soaring prices are only going to get worse, according to the think tank, the New Zealand Initiative. Researcher and author of a report into the matter, Leonard Hong, says demand-side solutions, such as the Bright Line test, are just tinkering around the edges, and that only freeing up enough supply can solve housing unaffordability and overcrowding. His projections are that between 2019 and 2060, even with low migration and low fertility, New Zealand will need nearly 15,500 additional dwellings each year. And this is in addition to the current undersupply of 40,000. He says long-term demographic transformations and changing household sizes are affecting overall housing demand. To tell us how he has reached his projections and also to discuss how things might change to either alleviate this or just because we do things differently, we welcome Leonard Hong in the Wellington studio. Good morning.
Morning, Catherine.
First of all, things are bad enough with supply as they are now. And what do you argue are the elements of that? How did we get where we are?
Well, I think the NZ Initiative, we've been pushing this campaign for the central government to allow local councils to have more incentives to want to allow urban development and to sprawl up for urban development and also allow land supply available. At the moment, there's been a huge quagmire, as you can see. Councils don't want to allow more land available because they don't have the revenue. Central government doesn't want to give the revenue to councils because they don't trust them. Gen Z and millennials, people like me who want to get into, you know, the property market and buy houses, we can't buy them. And so it's just a misalignment of interests.
What are the causes of it, the underlying causes of it? Do you have a view on why we have been as stuck? We know that there are issues, as you say, around funding and infrastructure if you do greenfields. Developers don't want to do it. Councils don't want to do it. Taxpayers don't particularly want to put in new motorways and all the linkages in between. When it comes to high-rises and intensification, we know there's pushback from local lobbies. So they're the problems. They're not new. What's been the underlying cause of a failure to break through, do you believe?
You know, it's the political stuff, right? It's the political economic aspect of this. Is that, you know, through the last, like, I mean, since MMP was introduced, right, we've tried to cater to the middle of the political spectrum. At the moment in New Zealand, around 65% of Kiwis are homeowners, and so for them, for their interests, they want to see prices to continue to inflate. Whereas people like me, who are in the minority, we want to see prices to become more affordable, sort of like Germany, or sort of like Texas, Houston, or Atlanta, Georgia, where prices are far more affordable. The median multiple there is around 3, and Germany is around 4. But to me, it's very political.
So politics is the main issue, pandering to those who already own and also most likely to vote their
Correct.
Age bracket.
Yep.
You believe that's the root cause?
That's one of the main causes, but I think the two things that we need to focus on is to really scale up dwelling construction, right? We've hit peak, 39,000, which is the highest since the 1970s.
Per year needed to be built.
Yes.
Consents are at record highs, I think, at the moment, but that's still not getting us
there. nowhere near enough that, yeah.
Okay. Let's look at your projections and work through why you say there isn't going to be some magic fix in a few years' time. Tell me what you're basing your projections, and it's difficult, 2060, every decade you project out, the less reliable it's going to be.
Mm-hmm.
But given how long it's taken us to get here, let's work with it. What are you basing your projections on after 2060?
Well, I use demography. So I use a software called Spectrum. It's funded by the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, UNICEF, United Nations, and the Futures Institute. And it's a very clever software, actually. So you can do literally anything with it. But what I use is I use StatsNZ's median, low, and high projections for life expectancy. I use the fertility rates. Obviously, we've hit our lowest in a very long time, 1.61. And I also use net migration figures. And the reason why I did this, Catherine, is people, a lot of segments of New Zealand think that we can control migration, we can control this, we can control that. The reality is we can't, unless you're communist China, which have tried the one-China policy, one-child policy, right? And in a liberal democracy, we can't necessarily control these factors. So we just need to take this as a given. But I try to look at every scope possible.
So low, medium and high, using Stats' own figures.
Correct. And also, zero net migration.
Zero net migration.
Assuming that we close the border entirely to Australia and every Kiwi around the world, let's assume how many more dwellings do we need to build? I did that
too. So hang on.
Mm.
Is that in one scenario that you assumed zero net migration or in all?
That, there's 36.
Yes.
Different fertility rates.
Yes.
Different life expectancy.
Right. One of them has zero net migration as a factor, or all of them?
Zero net migration, low net migration, medium,
got
high
you.
Net migration.
Got you, got you. So you look at it, you look at every possible machination.
Yeah.
So what was the range? Give us the two extremes, low, high, and then we'll talk about the middle.
So for the next 20 years, if we close the border entirely, under all of the low, medium, high life expectancy, even or the low, medium, high fertility rate, we still need to build at least 20,000 new dwellings, and that is not taking into account the houses that we need to replace, because houses don't last forever, and the shortfall that was calculated by Infometrics, 40,000.
20,000 per year?
Yep.
And that is, what weights that then? What's driving that? If we've got no migration or we've got a falling fertility rate, mm-hmm. what's driving needing even 20,000 new houses?
The native population. You know, we're getting older.
Right.
Know. Yeah. And the thing is, this is empirically proven, Catherine. This is happening not just in New Zealand, this has been an ongoing trend, but Germany, Korea, Australia, the United States, and other countries.
So what happens with the aging demographic that requires that many new houses?
The average household size shrinking.
Right. So mm-hmm. more and more single-person houses.
Yes.
We know that's already a trend.
Mm-hmm.
What else do you factor in as a presumption to reach that figure?
Well, I'll just mention a caveat, is that in my paper, I do note that there are income effects. As societies get richer, they are more likely to not live in, you could say, multi-families together, right? As they tend to like to live in nuclear families as a result of societies getting richer. That's a phenomenon that you see in India and other places. But assuming that, I use a software called Stata to look at the strong relationships between the average household size decreasing and also the median age going up across the OECD
right.
countries, obviously.
There is some, so that's the main factor, more and more single-person households with an aging demographic, and
yes.
we know that peaks in New Zealand. I think the baby boomer retirement population peaks around 2040,
mm-hmm,
from
mm-hmm.
Superfund statistics.
Mm-hmm.
Let's look at some of the other assumptions, though. Your numbers have been questioned. Your premise, as I understand it, this also includes a household, say, with three children, right? And that the three children will all move into their own households as adults, requiring three extra households after the family home.
Mm-hmm.
However, you also refer to the life stage of partnering up, and wouldn't that then halve the number of actual dwellings involved, the family home plus three?
No, you're not wrong. Is that, you know, there has been sociocultural changes, right? You know, we have more divorces, we have more people that are like living more alone, as you mentioned, and obviously this is kind of taken into account by Stats New Zealand themselves. By 2038, they expect the average household size to drop to around 2.3, 2.4, I think. Yeah.
Right. So you can see that's a questionable part of the numbers.
Yeah.
I could come back and argue for you, though, that our divorce rates of, you know, legally bound couples have been as high as 1 in 3.
Mm-hmm.
So actually, at some point during the life cycle, people are back looking for a place again, two separate households again. So really, should we be looking at, and this will be averaged out over the course of the years, people
mm-hmm.
moving in and out of that shared the new generation shared home and in and out again.
Mm-hmm.
So somewhere in the middle of your original projections and what people are saying is going to be the real need. Do you understand?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, okay. All right. If there are changes in demographics that lead to higher sole person households, how much of that will be catered for by an already growing trend for apartment living, smaller dwellings? We're already seeing that.
Yes.
Have you factored in a trend for a different type of house in New Zealand? We are patently in our biggest cities already developing very much along those lines and not a villa on 3/4 of an acre.
No, I mean, those trends are ongoing, and I highlight that in chapter 4 of my paper. It's happening. I mean, 40% of new dwellings are like condominiums, apartments, and other forms. That's a good sign. But for me, as an economist, it's not my, you could say, it's not my role to judge what developers do in terms of their sorts of constructions, right? They can build whatever buildings
right.
that they want to build.
So 40%, even today, 40% of those 20,000 new homes a year on the lowest situation, which is not realistic. We're not going to have zero net migration, but let's work with it for now. 40% of those might be multi-unit apartments. Okay. Next point. Are we also going to see, if not yet, arguably going to see a trend where those single dwellings, were we to facilitate it, those single dwellings of older New Zealanders, perhaps reaching retirement, might end up being some form of cohabitation, you know, different wings in a larger shared property, something between an individual home and an apartment?
Well, that could be an alternative. Yeah, I haven't really looked into that properly myself personally, if I'm honest. But like as I mentioned, Catherine, my paper is to just point out the fact that you know these trends are happening. Demographic aging is happening. So taking that into account, we need to really scale up the number of dwellings and constructions overall, regardless of whether if that's state housing development or whether if it's property developers building. That was the key core crux of my paper, though.
If it's the case that housing needs rise faster than population growth, is this a new phenomenon? Is it different from when the baby boomers' parents were raising families?
It's a bit different because back then, I mean, I think you might be thinking about, like, you know, the dependency rate ratio, right? The dependency ratio in, like, the 1950s and 60s was actually pretty high, but that's because the number of people in that category were all young children.
So
now it's old people. Yeah.
We had population growth at X rate, in fact, a fast rate, but you might have mum, dad, and four kids living in one household.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So when did that turn?
Happened around, I think, the 80s or 90s.
So right ahead of when we started running into serious headroom, coinciding since the 90s anyway with growing immigration, we had this demographic change. And that demographic trend is continuing from households with a lot of people in them all the way through to single households becoming predominant. How has COVID impacted this? We know it's blown prices out of the water because, and I think we can draw a straight line through this, because the economic impacts were not as originally feared, and because people have spent on stuff at home, and because of stimulus over low interest rates. How has COVID impacted, if at all, your projections or the commentary you're making around them?
Yeah, I've taken that into account, obviously, as well, right? Because, you know, it's closed the borders entirely for, well, not around, I think it's around 5,000 for 2021, according to Treasury. So I used Treasury's pre-through numbers for my projections for the year 2020 and 2021. And then after that, I made the, you could say, the net migration numbers constant. I interpolated the numbers for life expectancy for 2060. And I've also, for fertility, I just kept the constant, assuming low, medium, high. So low in the sense of the European numbers, European Union. Union's fertility rate is around 1.5, we're around 1.7 around 2019, and high as in 2.1, which is the replacement rate. So I did take that into account, COVID-19.
We've been talking about your scenario where there's zero net migration and where population growth remains falling. Actually, fertility rates actually remain falling in New Zealand. That's not realistic. What we are actually anticipating is that there is going to be large immigration demand, some of it New Zealanders overseas wanting to come home, so that's open door, their rights are their rights, some of it being people who might have just had a year of lockdown somewhere else and been watching Instagram and think this is a great place to come. So let's move up the scale. What are your medium and your high projections for new dwelling needs per year?
For 2038, my numbers were around 26,000 to 35,000, and that is assuming that the net migration level is low and medium. So low as in 14,000, which is close to what Winston Peters might have wanted.
And it's then been net 70,000 even before COVID. That's right.
So the scary thing is that my paper might even be an underestimate. And the medium, I assumed around 42,000. So I looked at Stats NZ historical permanent net migration numbers, and the average was around 20,000. So you could say it's around, since 1992, it's been around that range, the low and medium around there. But it could be even higher, like you said. My high is 42,000, sorry. Low 14,000 net migration, 28,000 medium, 42,000 high.
42,000 new dwellings every year. Each and every year? Do you have the raw population numbers to correlate with, say, your high and your low at a point in time? In other words, can this be converted into actual population figures?
Yeah, well, yeah. My paper, which I use Spectrum for, Spectrum does everything.
Okay.
Yeah.
So tell me what the population numbers are, say, in 2038. That was the year you mentioned earlier. What are the population numbers in New Zealand under your high and your low and your medium?
Well, I know the numbers for 2060, but not 2038.
Okay, let's do 2060.
Yeah. For the six most realistic scenarios, it's between 5.5 million and 7.3 million.
5.5 million?
Yeah.
Isn't that what we are now?
No, 5.1.
5.1. Oh, I meant the 5 million bit. Is there a projection that says in 40 years' time there's only going to be 5.8 million
that's,
New Zealanders?
But that's assuming that the population stagnates and declines like that, slowly. And by the way, Catherine, this is happening across countries like Germany and Korea. Germany's has been stagnating around 80 million. Korea has been stagnating around 50 million. But despite having a stagnant population, right, the number of households have gone up by 7 million for Germany in the 30 years that they've had. And Korea, it's gone up by 4 million in the last 10 years. You get why this phenomenon is scary? You know, and this is, like you said, this is not new, but not a lot of the people in the public are talking about this trend of average household size shrinking.
Okay, but then I look at some statistics, and thanks to Stuff for an article last week on the projections that Stats New Zealand and Treasury New Zealand does. And a decade ago, Treasury's projections for New Zealand hitting 5.1 million, mm-hmm. which was our population in December last year, it would have said 2030. So it was out by nearly a decade. So our trend has actually been for rapid population
yes.
growth driven by migration.
Yes, yes.
Do you see anything that's going to change that trajectory for New Zealand?
Well, not necessarily. I mean, I think we'll continue to have migration. And, you know, obviously we know that as one migrant arrives in the country, we either need a house immediately, have a vacancy available or build, or otherwise they're going to crowd in. And that crowding is the reason why our prices have gone out of control, right? This is a tragedy for everyone concerned.
So let's come back to the numbers, though. Treasury projecting, again, according to Stuff, that there'll be 6.8 million people living in New Zealand yeah. in 2072, which is 50 years away. From 5.1 million now, when it thought we'd hit 5.1 million in 2030. I think Stats gives a bigger range in those projections.
That's what I try to do. That's why I try to cover zero net migration all the way to high net migration, 42,000. Yeah.
So which do you think is the most likely of your scenarios?
My paper could even be an underestimation, right? I mean, my paper highlighted that this is the range, assuming that we have around a median net migration flow, right? So this is what I mean. I'm just saying, it's scary, Kathy.
The thing is, you're doing the numbers.
Yeah?
The question is, are the government statisticians doing realistic projections? And let's come back shorter term. 50 years is, frankly, a fairly ridiculous time to expect to be accurate. But even to be out by 10 years ago is more worrying when we know how long it takes to build, let alone make legal changes that make building possible.
Yeah.
So are you seeing in the data that you are using to run through the software you are using, are you having confidence in the kind of estimates coming out of our government agencies?
I think they're doing all right. I mean, I use Statsins' numbers for a reason, because I use their historical data, not their projections, right?
Don't we need to be doing projections?
I think we should. That's why I did mine.
I'm trying to draw a line between what you're highlighting and the way we are planning in this country. And what is your comment of what you've observed?
It's unfortunate. It's tragic. It's frustrating, personally. You know, the fact that people are not politicians and the developers and every stakeholder involved in this process, right? They're not catering to this, right? Because if you go on a website called Zillow, Catherine, you can just search up the prices in Texas, Houston. The prices there are like $300,000, $200,000 USD for like a 4-bedroom, 3-bathroom, 1,000 square foot house. And I just think to myself, my goodness, that'll be worth like $2 million in Auckland somewhere. if you look at international examples, there are countries that are doing really, really well, and we're just not good enough. We aren't. We're creating more intergenerational wealth inequality. I mean, the older generation are getting more and more capital, whereas my generation's... Yeah, it's frustrating, personally. It is.
Do we have another risk? We're talking about migration rates.
Hmm.
Do we have a risk that our migration is going to be driven by wealthy retirees who might want to come to what they perceive as this COVID-free paradise, and not the young talent we need to come here and drive this country and raise families?
Well, that's what Immigration New Zealand's been saying, right? I mean, they're saying, look, we need to bring in more construction workers, we need to bring in more engineers, we need to bring in more tradesmen, because they tend to be younger, and as... Like I said in my paper, as our population tends to get older, our prospects for fiscal prudence to pay for superannuation, to pay for healthcare, to pay for pensions, that prospect is getting less and less dim, and our ability to have a fairly low debt to GDP ratio is getting far worse.
Let me look at talk about it differently. Is the kind of young person we want coming here,
mm-hmm.
whether in the trades to physically build, or to, you know, use their entrepreneurial or other skills to build at any level of the economy, but also to be the citizens of our country, are we at real risk that they're going to be on Zello going, pretty, but I can't afford that and I'm going here?
I think it's looking more and more likely. I mean, when I talk to some of my colleagues from the University of Auckland, who I study with together, they say, hey, Leonard, I might just move to, like, Australia, because their housing affordability is a little bit better than Auckland at the moment. So yeah, you're absolutely right. We could see more brain drain. In fact, New Zealand's had a huge brain drain problem for a while, right? And yeah.
Amongst you and your peers, is this actively considered and discussed?
Somewhat, yes. Absolutely, yeah. Prices are getting obscene. I mean, 730,000 nationally, well over $1 million in Auckland, well over 900,000 in Wellington for like an ordinary family house. It's getting harder. It really is.
Do you see any government policy response on the supply side that is getting anywhere near addressing what you project the need to be? Well, actually, it's here right now. But what it needs to be each and every year, even under the lowest of those scenarios.
Mm. In my paper, I talk about former Minister Twyford's reforms in terms of allowing urban development, more urban development through the National Policy Statement on Urban Development, and also his changes to infrastructure financing, which allows councils to want to build more, right? So I think in the long term, that will do some good changes, but there needs to be far more done, right? And I think the reason why KiwiBuild was not necessarily, you know, it didn't work out, because it's the Resource Management Act. And plus, we don't have any people coming in. We don't have enough people. So, you know, that peak, 39,000 that we just talked about, that could just be the peak, even though we need to build more like 60,000, 70,000 to accommodate the chronic shortage as well.
We might have had our peak capacity to build.
Yeah, perhaps.
Thank you, Leonard.
Thank you.
Leonard Hong has penned this paper on the New Zealand Initiative. Is that open, by the way? We can put a link through to
sure,
it?
Sure, yeah. It's publicly available. Anybody can read it. Feel free to email me. I love talking about this sort of stuff, and it's personal.
Thank you. 28 minutes to 10.